Maine Constitution is the executive branch empowered to hand out ice cream cones. This is another Obama abomination, Cruz babbled, and I will stand here like a rock until hell freezes over and the ice cream melts. He added heroically, if not me, who? The Koch brothers chimed in that Obama's congressional ice cream scheme is a classic socialist ploy to legitimize government handouts of sweets to everyone as an opium for the masses, inducing them to keep voting for Democrats. And then Representative Trey Gowdy piled on, claiming that the sweet treats for Congress idea might have been sent to Obama in a top-secret email from Hillary Clinton's personal email account. Gowdy demanded that she appear before his congressional committee and admit that her ice cream email was part of the cover-up of her Benghazi scandal. This is Jim Hightower saying, it was just another day of Republicans at play, pretending to be a Congress.
Hightower's commentaries are brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown, the monthly newsletter with Hightower's take on what Wall Street and Washington are up to. For information, visit HightowerLowdown.org.
Temperatures rising, fever is high, can't see no future, can't see no sky, my feet are so heavy.
Say hey, it's Monday, right here at 90.1 KZFR. Say hey, Chico's only locally produced sports talk radio program. My name is Jake, joined as always by Noobs. Noobs, how you doing?
Good, man. Enjoying the rain.
Yeah, it's going to be pretty sunny for like the next week after this.
Right.
So enjoy it today, and then we'll get some high 70s. It's okay, though. We've had real rain, so I'm okay with that.
We have, yeah. I would like a little more.
I would like more.
But I'm thankful for what we've had.
We might get more in April.
That'd be cool.
But the reservoirs are up to their normal level right now.
Right.
As if we have normal winter. So
right.
That's cool. Let's get right into it. March Madness, Noobs. While we don't have one extreme Cinderella, we have had a lot of really good games.
Mm-hmm.
Two straight-up buzzer beaters, several overtime and double overtime games.
We had a 15 win for the eighth time in history.
That's right. We had a 15 win. Northern Iowa hit a half quarter to win in round one.
Crazy.
Which was super cool. Wisconsin, the kid hit a fall-away three-pointer to win last night, doing his best Steph impersonation. It's definitely been an exciting tournament. Let's see, the highest seed left in the tournament is an 11.
But it's Gonzaga.
It's Gonzaga, and yeah. They're always around.
Right, and Syracuse is a 10, but they're always around.
Syracuse has won it all on more than one occasion.
Yeah, no, they're definitely a powerhouse.
They are indeed. And then all of our ones are still in there. Let's see. You can't say it's top-heavy yet, but it has the potential to wind up being one of those years where, you know, the Elite Eight and such is a bunch of ones, twos, threes,
right,
and fours.
Which makes for good games. But yeah, we're not going to have, like, usually, you know, we were talking about last week how a 12 always wins,
mm-hmm,
in the first round, multiple 12s.
Right.
And we had like three 11s win this year and I think two 12s.
Mm-hmm.
But none of those teams except for Gonzaga got through.
Right.
And, you know, but they're not really an underdog, because typically they're like a top four seed.
Right. You and I, University of Northern Iowa, got real close. That we were just talking about this. They blew a 12-point lead with 33 seconds to play in regulation.
Heartbreaking.
It was brutal, man. Just brutal. They couldn't inbound the ball. It was just, that was really hard. It wound up going to double OT. It was a great game, but just didn't work out, and it reminded you of a painful sporting memory from your youth.
Well, thanks for bringing it up.
I want to make you talk about it.
My senior year in high school, I was a starting point guard on my team, and we went to the Final Four of states.
And what state were you living in at that point?
This was Alabama.
This was Alabama.
I was going to military school down in Alabama because I was not doing so well at public school in Connecticut. And, you know, the rents decided that that would be best for me. And anyway, senior year rolls around, and, you know, we had a really good squad. We started off slow, but really caught fire towards the end of the year. Anyway, we were playing against this school with a kid who was going to, you know, play D1 basketball. And, you know, been hearing a lot about the kid. He was a great player. But we pretty much shut him down all game.
Mm-hmm.
We had an 8-point lead at the end of the first quarter, and we maintained that 8-point. We were up by 8 at the end of each quarter.
Mm-hmm.
We're up by 9 with a minute to go, like a minute and 2 on the clock. I remember looking. We're up by 9. We get outscored 11-2 in the final minute. This kid hits 3 threes and dunks on us. Okay, it was like he'd been playing possum all game or something.
Right.
And it was a very heavy Lakeland crowd. There was very few of our guys in the stands, and it was an absolute nightmare.
Ugh.
You know, and I put one off the side of the backboard. I mean, it was just, I have never stopped thinking about it.
Man.
So thanks for giving me the opportunity to relive that one.
You know, when we get to baseball season, we can talk about some of my dark years.
And the thing is, too, if we had won that game, we would have played the team that we'd lost to in our division championship. And so we would have had a chance to not only get revenge, but then win the entire thing.
Oh, man.
The team we definitely could have beat. We lost to them by like a point in overtime.
Right.
You know, so it's just something that, you know, that song Glory Days, man.
Yeah.
It says it all.
Yeah, so you and I is hurting. They were definitely looking like the Cinderella of the tournament. It just didn't work out.
Yeah.
Oregon wins a good game last night over St. Joe's. Yale tried to come back on Duke. That was a good one. Yale was down big after the first half, and they wound up closing the gap to 3 points with less than a minute.
Duke just seems to play down.
Outlasting them.
Yeah, they kind of play down to the level of their opponent. No offense to Yale or anything, but I don't know.
Well, Duke was in and out of the standings off and on all year. It's right. One of the weaker Duke teams, at least by Duke standards.
But it seems like historically they don't lose a lot in the beginning rounds, not like Kansas has a tendency to do. But Duke always kind of is like, it's like they want to lose.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, not really, but you know what I mean? It's just they just always let these teams kind of hang around.
Uh-huh.
Like even in the first rounds when they're like a number one seed, they don't ever seem to blow anybody out.
Right.
They win in advance,
mm-hmm.
you know, and that Oregon game on Thursday night, I believe, is going to be really interesting, a very bi-coastal.
Yeah.
You
yeah.
know, a lot of right. interest.
That's right. You know, the Pac-12 really didn't fare all that well.
No.
Cal wound up losing their starting point guard to a broken hand.
Ouch.
Leading scorer. They got beat by Hawaii. You know, USC went out early, right on down the line. It wasn't a good year for the Pac-12 in the tournament.
Yeah, Utah got knocked out by Gonzaga.
Utah got smoked by Gonzaga, 82-59. Let's see here. Who else almost got through? We almost had a pretty good Cinderella story in Little Rock got through to the second round, but Iowa State took them out pretty handily. And then Stephen F. Austin gave Notre Dame a run for their money in a really good game.
Mm-hmm.
But Notre Dame winds up pulling it out by 1 point. That was a borderline buzzer beater. Now, one thing that's actually been irking me a bit watching the tournament is, so this is kind of a big picture thing. So the 3-point game is far more prevalent both in the NBA and in college these days.
Mm-hmm.
And I really think that part of the reason that the 3-point game has become as popular / strategic, you know, a part of the way, you know, teams model themselves and game plan is partly because you really can't, you're not allowed to play interior defense anymore. And depending on what type of team you are, you may have a much better chance scoring by shooting the ball. Because I watch these games, and anytime somebody drives the lane, it's free throws.
Right.
It's free throws. And, you know, It's horrible to watch. B, if you're a team that doesn't have a lot of talent in terms of explosiveness, maybe you don't recruit quite as well. You can't really necessarily even compete with some of the teams that have those guys. It behooves you to shoot from the outside more.
Right.
I don't know. It's weird. Like I was watching the Notre Dame game. They play much more of a half court offense. Every time the ball goes down in low, foul.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't matter what. Hands straight up in the air. You can't even contest these players without right. getting to the free throw line. I don't know. It's kind of weird. Like, it's frustrating for me to watch, because if you are a team that has explosive players, you're automatically going to the line 15 times more than a team that doesn't have that type of inside. It's just, I don't know. It's frustrating to watch when you cannot, you're not allowed to play interior defense.
Right.
Even if that's the only way you can stop a team that's bigger than you, you can't play interior defense. And we see it in the NBA all the time.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you hear older players complaining about, oh, I couldn't play with these touch fouls today. And it's not a brand new thing. It's been headed that direction for many, many years.
Right.
It's just a little bit, I don't know, it's a little bit hard to watch at times.
Yeah, I mean, I, you know, some of my favorite, you know, times watching basketball were, you know, in the 90s when the Knicks and Bulls were going at it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I remember one play where Jordan got fouled like four times by Charles Oakley.
Right.
And they just, you know what I mean, they swallowed their whistles because it's playoff basketball.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I like,
I don't want to see people getting in fights.
No.
But, you know, let them play.
Right. And, you know, I kind of have a, I don't know, this is going to be, I think it's a novel idea. Like, what if we flipped the script on basketball and gave an extra point for interior scoring? Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like a little circle or something, you know what I mean? To where, like, you get 3 points for, so, it, like, it behooves you to try and get as close as you can.
Uh-huh.
You know what I mean? That would be, that would kind of throw the whole thing on
its
head.
That might be the most exotic thing you've ever said on this program.
Thank you. But think about it. I mean, you know, times change. I mean, the three-point line was only, you know, brought in like the early 80s.
Yeah.
You know, I think that was an ABA thing, and then the NBA adopted it.
Right.
Because it's so popular. Look at it now. Like you said, the game has changed so drastically.
And I was watching some of the ESPN Classic games, you know, leading up to the tourney recently, and some of the big college games from the early 80s, pre-three-point line, pre-shot clock.
Right.
You talk about watching a different game.
Yeah.
Holy cow.
Yeah.
Teams,
you can just hold the ball.
Yeah, teams with a lead.
Yeah.
Down the stretch would literally just hold the ball and pass it around.
Mm-hmm.
That was it. That was the whole strategy.
Yeah, I saw one of those where it was like they played the four-corner offense where they just passed it.
Uh-huh.
You know, and they literally, it was like 3.5 minutes
right
at the end of the game.
Yeah.
So the shot clock, great thing. Love it. And I love the three-point line too, but I have to agree with Popovich. It's changed the game in ways that aren't necessarily positive, you know, because we have gotten away from the big man and interior scoring. And I kind of miss that. You know, the whole point of basketball was to try and get as close as you can because it's an easier shot.
And I think that you could bring the interior scoring back quite a bit if you would just let guys play.
Right.
You know, you don't get a lot of foul calls out behind the three-point line just because, you know, people assume, and correctly to an extent, that the percentages are lower that you're going to hit that shot, so you don't need to break
and
it
you're
up.
Gonna give them
and you're going to give them three free throws.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But statistically, if you think about it, like, it makes sense. If you're shooting 35% from three, that's the same as shooting 50% from two.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? So it's like, if you got guys like Curry and Thompson, you might as well be jacking it up 30 times a game from out there.
Yeah. Yeah. Because if you make the same amount of baskets per quarter, but half of yours are threes or roughly however many, that's how many extra points you have to make up.
Totally.
That's part of why, for example, the Warriors outscore everybody most of the time, because X amount of shots per game are three-pointers.
Right.
And those, how else are you going to make up those points?
Exactly. But the thing is, though, that if they don't shoot well like they didn't on Saturday night, you know, then you have a situation where I think they only scored 79 points.
Yeah.
I mean, that's like, that's anemic
totally,
for anybody.
Totally
weird
game.
Yeah.
Yeah. Getting away from collegiate hoops for a second, talking Warriors now on Say Hey. That was a game that, like we talked about last week, I didn't expect them to win.
Mm-hmm.
And then once Iguodala and Bogut were out, backside of a back-to-back in San Antonio, you're not going to win that game.
Right.
It's just not going to happen.
Right. I mean,
they kept it close in a weird game.
They did.
87-79.
Yeah. I mean, they only lost by eight. And, you know, I saw at one point Clay and Steph were only like 4 of 20,
right?
I think shooting, you know, I don't know how they finished up, but you know, I think it was a, you know, you had said last week that you thought it was a really important game for San Antonio, and I kind of was like, I kind of downplayed it a little bit, but like in retrospect, I think you're right, because I think San Antonio did need it.
They did,
to be like, you
just
know what,
a mental boost.
We're just as good at home as you are.
Yeah.
And you know,
and now they're only 2.5 out.
They're not going to get number one, I don't think, because Golden State's got so many home games left. and there's only like 10 or 12 games left in the regular season, so they'd have to go like...
Still have to play the Spurs again.
They do.
The Golden State just has to get a little healthy there with Andre and Bogut. Those are big pieces to be missing.
The thing, and it really is huge, because you think about these two teams, how well they play at home. Somebody's going to have to win a road game.
Uh-huh.
You know what I mean? The team, and it looks like it's going to be San Antonio.
Right.
They're going to have to go into Golden State in the conference finals and win one on the road. And I don't think either one of those teams has lost a home game since like last year.
Yeah. 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 The Warriors lost two home games in the playoffs last year, but they haven't lost a regular season.
They lost two home games in the playoffs?
Yeah, they did.
Memphis and
Cleveland.
Wow.
Yeah, they lost game
Oh, that's right.
Two.
They lost game two.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so the playoffs
God, it's like that
beast.
Boggles my mind because I was like, you know, they're just so invincible.
Yeah,
there.
Playoffs are just a different beast altogether.
That's right, that's right.
Let's take a quick break, and Jordan has our Chico State weekly wrap-up. Let's have a listen to what happened in Chico State land. Well, noobs, there's nothing on that file.
Apparently not much was going on in Chico State land.
It's ticking away, but there's nothing on that file.
Uh-oh.
Well, that'll happen. Anyway.
That's the beauty of live radio.
That's the beauty of live radio, so they say. That's what you say when something doesn't go right.
Instead of fresh air, it's dead air.
But then getting back to college, just to wrap that up, we are in the Sweet 16 now. Let's look at some of these matchups. Kansas, Maryland. We got Miami, as in Florida, Villanova, blast from the past, so to speak. I still think of Kerry Kittles. I don't know about you. I don't know
why
I do, but I do.
I go all the way back to Raleigh Massimino in that Georgetown game.
Uh-huh. The glory days.
Yeah. I mean, Villanova is one of those school, you know, one of those Big East schools that just has always had a great basketball program.
Mm-hmm.
You know, nothing on the football side, but... That's what's great about the Big East is they've got all these tiny schools that still, you know, these Catholic schools that just play great basketball.
These are actually some classic matchups when I look at them.
Oh, there's some blue bloods.
Notre Dame, Wisconsin.
Yeah.
Those are two really good teams.
North Carolina, Indiana.
North Carolina, Indiana.
Yeah.
That's a really good
one. One thing I wanted to say to you was, man, if you were in Des Moines, Iowa last week, you got to see Connecticut, Kentucky, Indiana, and Kansas.
Right.
I mean, that's like... creme de la creme of college basketball as far as historically speaking.
Right.
So, I mean, like, that would have been the region to go to.
Yeah. Yeah, no. You lucked out if that was where you had your tickets
for, sure.
for the first two rounds. Then we head down to the bracket, and we got Oregon-Duke. Great matchup of big schools. Oregon, not necessarily thought of as a basketball powerhouse,
right.
but they're still Oregon. We got...
I'd like to see them break through and get a national championship.
Yeah.
Because their football team had been knocking on the door a couple years, you know.
Virginia, Iowa State. Virginia plays great defense. That's what they're known for these days. We got Gonzaga, Syracuse.
That'd be interesting.
That'd be an interesting one. And then we got Texas A&M and Oklahoma. That should be a good game. A
couple teams that used to be in the same conference for a long time.
The number one, if you will, collegiate player coming into the season has declared for the NBA draft, Ben Simmons at LSU. What do you make of that when if you're the number one player in the country and you couldn't even get your team into the NCAA tournament?
That is interesting.
That's a little bit, okay.
Yeah, I was, because you'd think that he'd be able to carry those guys to at least a 20-win season.
If you're the best team player in the country, I mean, I suppose you should, but that, hey, when you're a freshman, you just come out now.
I looked up the other day, just out of curiosity, players in the NBA by school.
Uh-huh.
You know, and Kentucky was number one, and there was a big drop-off after that in the SEC. But LSU has like five guys, and it's just surprising because they're not ever any good. And yet they produce NBA players.
Right. They haven't been noteworthy, at least.
Not since Shaq.
Since Shaq.
Yeah.
It's a little bit, I mean, I could be wrong, but a little bit of Cal syndrome for football there. Cal football produces
they do
a myriad of quality NFL players.
Especially
constantly.
Running backs.
Running backs, quarterbacks, defense. And yet they haven't made noise in the BCS in many, many years.
You can understand that because it's like there's so many players on a football team that you're going to have some standouts. But to have a guy like that's going to be probably the consensus number one, and like you said, can't carry his team to at least a berth.
Which also speaks to how the consensus number one is nothing. It's just not what it once was, as we talked about.
Right.
You're talking about 1 year of college every single year for the number one recruit.
This isn't like when it was clear that Sam Bowie was the number one pick.
Right. Well, which is – there's actually a good I think it's one of those – they did a series on ESPN years ago, top 10 reasons you can't blame such and such.
Right.
And one of them was for drafting Sam Bowie.
Yeah.
It was actually a very good one.
Okay.
Wound up being a pretty good player, but
no Michael Jordan.
No Michael Jordan. Yeah. So I mean, I guess that Ben Simmons is going to be a Sixer unless the Lakers get him.
Poor guy.
I mean, good Lord, you go to the Sixers, forget about it.
Yeah.
Not only have none of those number one picks helped them, but they haven't even wound up leaving the team to become better players elsewhere.
Right.
It's just been a black hole.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they're in line to get the number one pick again, unless it just pops out to, you know, the Lakers or whoever else who are six or so games better.
Well, whoever the NBA fixes it for. I mean, let's be real.
Well, I mean, they've been trying to fix it for the Sixers for about a decade now, and that hasn't worked.
Right.
So we'll see. NFL draft is getting closer. Not that it's terribly interesting.
Sorry.
But we certainly hear a lot about it.
Yeah.
Don't really even feel like talking about the draft at the moment. Baseball is getting close. We're just 2 weeks out.
No, that I'm excited for.
That I'm excited for. I mean, we're going to do our preview. I'd say give us another maybe next week. Yeah. Because then the first game will basically be the following weekend.
So we split it up by...
With true opening day on that Monday.
We could do two previews, AL and NL.
We could do AL and NL.
Could.
Maybe that's what we'll do.
All right.
There's plenty to talk about, that's for sure.
Yeah.
You know what I thought about the other day is the Olympics aren't that far off.
Oh, man.
They're not that far away.
No. Do you ever listen to LeSeau? Which will be coming up later.
Yeah, sure. Listen to LeSeau.
Oh, my God. Harry Shearer does a great... He does these updates on the Olympics. And just all the problems with, like, the water.
Oh, right.
It's going to be a nightmare.
Rio, this for summer, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
And literally, there's, like, dead bodies, like, floating where there's going to be, you know, like, kayak races and
right,
stuff.
Right, right. Oh, that sounds
mess.
Good.
Yeah.
It's good for the, you know, it's kind of a new element for the race. So you have to mind.
Obstacles, yeah.
Yeah, watch out for the floating corpses. Rio, and that starts in, what, mid-June, I want to say?
I thought they were like July. In August.
August?
Or
okay,
I
this summer.
Know.
Yeah, let's
it's
not
in the summer.
Let's not give a firm date on that.
No.
Let's leave something to the listener there. but I was talking to my buddy the other day, and there's been some track and field on recently, and in Olympic years, you know, those things, whether it's track and field or the World Cup for skiing or any of that stuff, in an Olympic year, when you notice it on television, you kind of pay a little bit closer attention,
right?
Because it's going to be real relevant real soon. And I get sucked in by the Olympics big time. As we've talked about before, I even went and volunteered for the 2010 Winter Olympics. I was in Whistler the whole time.
Cool.
For the Alpine stuff. And I get so hooked. I'll stay up all night if it's wherever it is to watch. You know, now you can watch anything live via streaming on like the NBC website. It's pretty cool. And I now, regardless of where it is and all of the disastrous politics that go into choosing these places and robbing the countries blind of money, the games are still the games, and
they are
exciting.
Yeah,
no matter what you're into.
Well, it's cool because you like there's these sports that you wouldn't watch on a normal basis.
Even if you wanted to, you couldn't, unless
right.
you were going to your local college or something.
Right. But like, you know, the indoor bicycle races,
uh-huh.
like on that track that's sloped,
yeah.
whatever that one's called.
I wouldn't
called.
Know
that's
where
fun.
To go see that if I wanted to.
Well, that's what I mean. But it has to be happening like the 4 years in between.
Oh, yeah, it's happening all the time.
But like where?
I don't know. I've never even seen a track like that.
No.
Yeah. But and, they're out there.
Well, that you bring up a good point about what this does to the countries, because these places they've got to build these places, and then nobody ever uses these facilities ever again.
Yeah, if you want to see some really good images, go to Google Images and type in China Summer Olympics, and then like you know Ghost Town or something like
right.
that, and all of these, you know, because there's controversy with that kind of stuff in a place like China anyway. Because of how massive it is and, you know, communism and the way thing. Anyway, there are just deserted, massive Olympic facilities all over the country,
which kind of boggles the mind because they're a really strong country, especially when it comes to sports.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they're like they've kind of replaced the Soviet Union as like the number two
sure
medal winner behind the United States.
Yeah,
at least in the summer games. And so you'd think that these would be like facilities that they'd be training in,
right?
So
expendable,
crazy,
and it happens in a lot of these places. It's definitely interesting,
huh?
Yeah, I mean, I haven't read it. Personally, I'll admit I haven't read a lot into Rio's prep. Every country has a difficult time, no matter how advanced or how corrupt or whatever their situation might be. It's tough.
Yeah.
I mean, even Canada, when I got up there, and Canada is known as one of the more civil places to live in the world in terms of the relationship people have with their government.
Totally.
And a lack of violence and things like that. And there was massive controversy all over Vancouver, for example, about the homeless population and sending people out on buses and all this stuff. So you can imagine in more in nations where there's more poverty, that there's a lot of difficulty in trying not to show that to the rest of the world when everybody shows up.
Well, they were doing that with the World Cup 2 years ago in Brazil. They were actually mm-hmm. like going into the ghettos and like cleaning people out.
Right.
Like, you know, and you know, now they're like going in and trying to get rid of all the standing water
uh-huh.
because the mosquitoes and the Zika virus.
Right.
So, I mean, there was somebody threw out an idea that they should just have basically like 8 cities that rotate the Olympics. And that way you get to use those facilities again,
mm-hmm.
you know, instead of like having all these like crazy places, you know, that's not a bad idea.
It's not a bad idea in theory, but
like LA, London,
everybody wants, you know, it is a world, the Olympics are everybody wants in. And I don't blame whatever country that has a massive population for making a push for it because
they're
sports fanatics too.
But I mean, like think about like Torino, Italy, mm-hmm. the host of the Winter Games.
Right.
But I mean, like, I don't know. You know, what good does it do them now?
I don't know. I don't know much about Torino.
And I don't even know how much money actually goes into these local economies anyway. It seems like a lot of people just stuff their pockets.
When we build a new stadium in, you know, your average American sporting city,
yeah.
and the city winds up losing tons of money in the process.
Yeah. And the taxpayers wind up footing the bill.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous.
Yeah. Yes, I mean, there's, you know what, you know who I bet has some information on this is Jim Hightower.
I bet he does.
As the Olympics get closer, Jim Hightower is going to have something to say about that.
I'm going to write him a letter.
Write him a letter.
Yeah.
Tell him to inform us. We just kid. Say Hey is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR members and by Buffalo Wild Wings. They're out there on East Avenue. With 36 beers on tap, wall-to-wall HDTVs, nonstop sports, wings, and more. Open every day from 11 a.m. till midnight. More info at buffalowildwings.com. And then we've got CSU Chico Continuing Education's Open University. Open University provides an opportunity for individuals to take Chico State classes on a space-available basis without going through the admissions process. More info about Open University is available by calling CSU Chico Continuing Education at 898-6105 or by visiting rce.csuchico.edu. I had a Anchorman moment right there as I was reading that, Noobs, where I would have read anything in front of me. I don't know why. I just got in that zone. It's a good thing that Ray wasn't trying to play a joke on me right then, because that would have been the end of me.
Like, we too low?
Yeah, I would have been out of here. But speaking of out of here, it's now just a little bit past 6. We'll be back next week, and let's do... Should we do the AL or the NL next week, Noobs?
Your call.
All right, we're just going to tease everybody. We'll figure it out.
Got to tune in.
We're going to start with the baseball MLB preview next week. You're going to have to tune in and stick around. It's time for Peace Talks Radio.
This is Peace Talks Radio, the series on peacemaking and nonviolent conflict resolution. Whether it's the search for inner peace or learning how to resolve conflicts we have with others in our families, workplaces, communities, or between nations, we consider it here on Peace Talks Radio. I'm series producer Paul Ingalls with Suzanne Kreider. Religious liberty and tolerance are complex issues impacted by a variety of factors, including education, politics, and the media. Dr. Kelly James Clark, a professor of philosophy at Calvin College in Grand Rapids, Michigan, has written a book exploring the issue.
Shortly after I wrote the book in Indonesia, a Christian pastor blasphemed Allah and was sentenced to, I think it was 3.5 years in prison. And Muslims thought, well, that's not enough. And they burned to the ground 4 churches. So we've got